Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavari Paschatide Shitarane Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sivasati Gauravakti Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So, yesterday I spoke about management and things like that. Today I'll speak about Bhagavad Gita.
Maybe another board. You have to be the writer, I think.
Can anyone remember? The point was, we had different stages that we go through in terms of effective management or effective living. Can anyone recall something about that?
When happiness is based on principles, that one does not look for external others, exploitative leadership.
Okay, so what are the stages we go through? Anyone remember? Who was here yesterday?
Able to look after ourselves first and then everything.
Okay, what do we call that? Okay, internal victory. Internal man. Okay, internal victory. That led to independence. And then where will you go after that? External victory. Yeah, and relating with other people, and that led to interdependence.
So before we get, you know, okay, put that down. Yeah. Internal independence. Oh, okay, external victory. Yeah. Internal victory leads to independence, external victory to interdependence. But before that, you have
a condition of dependence. So that's what we're talking about now. Karma. We don't have to be dependent, but generally what happens is we don't react properly to our situation, and then we become dependent and subject to ups and downs of the material world. So before that we have dependence. Well, we can say no control. No victory. Defeat.
No victory at all. Defeat.
Defeat. No control of the mind, no control of the senses, and subject to the gunas of material nature. That's defeat.
That is dependence?
Yeah, this condition of dependence.
Meaning that we are dependent upon the external world for our happiness. And it keeps changing, so therefore we get happiness and distress because of that.
Which is not a very good condition.
Internal victory means your peace comes from within, happiness comes from within, so what happens outside doesn't matter so much. It can affect you, but nevertheless you have your internal values, which are more important than the external world.
And after that, then we have external victory, in which you spread that type of consciousness to other people. So these are the phases. That's the external. What do we call that? Interdependence.
Interdependence. So for now, we'll start with the condition we start with, and which most people are subject to some degree, and that is the condition of dependence. In the Bhagavad Gita, in the introduction, Prabhupada mentions there are five topics of discussion in philosophy in general and in Bhagavad Gita. Anyone know those topics? Don't look. You won't find it anyways. There, someplace. Who's read the introduction to Bhagavad Gita? We can find out. Five topics. Okay.
Ishvara.
Okay.
Ishvara.
Yeah.
Jiva.
Okay.
Prakriti.
Prakriti.
Kala.
Kala and
Karma.
Karma. Okay. So we have five topics there, and so I'll discuss. I'm going to talk the other. I won't talk about time so much, but I'll talk about the other four topics definitely, and then I'll go into bhakti and stuff like that. So we start off a little backwards. We start with karma. First, technically, we start with jiva, and then God, and then material nature, and then karma.
that's how the procedure goes. But we'll start backwards. We'll start because we're dealing with dependence, so I'll talk about karma first. So this is the subject tonight, karma. This is a rather difficult diagram too. It's going to be time consuming to do this. Oh, anyway, I'll just explain. So karma, actually, the word karma means action. Literally, it means action. But like when I do an activity, it's a karma. But usually the connotation, when we talk about karma in the Western world, it means the reactions you get for your previous activities. That's what it means. So it's more of a reaction to our activities. Huh? But in general, it means activities. Huh? So I'll use it in the common way we use it, that is reaction. Huh? Reaction to the activities we do. That reaction is actually the result of a long series of events and causes. In other words, something happens to us in the material world, not that we do anything, we get a result, not that back to the thing, but it just happens to us, an accident, a sickness, something happens. You don't even like it, but it happens anyway, and we have no control over it. So Jenny would say, well, it was just an accident, or it just happened like that. But from the point of view of religion, there's a planned world, and nothing is accidental. So therefore, there's a cause of that. There's a cause for that situation we're in, that we cannot even prevent or predict in any way. There's a cause for that. Yeah? So I'll trace out the cause behind this, how it works. So the result is that we get the karma. That's the last phase of a whole series of previous causes we can trace back. This is explained, of course, in the Vedic literatures and in some other literatures of the world also. This resulting circumstance or event we call karma is the result of a previous activity we've done, most likely in a previous birth, some activity. It is not the result in terms of like I work hard to get money. It's not like that type of result. It's a moral result for the quality of your activity, depending on its violence and its, let's say, its foolishness or whatever. we get results from these activities, responses to the type of activity we do, according to our attitudes, etc. So it's a moral response, reaction to the level of the activity we've done. That's what it is. So we get a certain condition in lifestyle which affects us in some way. So we have the final karma, and then we have previously, sometime in the past, we'll have an action. And that's a karma also, an action we did that causes this. And now in between that, of course, there may be a big time gap. And maybe a little time gap. Sometimes we'll get the results in this lifetime. They call it nemesis in Greek. You get what you deserve in your life, and you do all the sinful activities at the end of life, you get all the problems on you. There's a nemesis and tragedies and Shakespearean tragedies. You get nemesis where fate grabs you and gives you what you deserve at the end, So sometimes you get it in this lifetime also. Sometimes you won't. And then we'll wonder what happened, Some person is such a bad person, he's got all the money all of his life, he's enjoying like anything, nothing ever happens to him. But we don't see the future, what's going to happen to him. Yeah? So it may not happen in this lifetime. The reaction may not even happen in the next lifetime. It may happen 5 lifetimes afterwards. It's not it comes immediately. It'll happen when it has to happen, according to the will of the Lord. But nevertheless, it's inevitable. You cannot avoid it. Just like the law of the country is unavoidable in most cases. They have to follow the law. So these are laws of God. And according to the activity, you get a result sometime in the future. So between the act and the result, there's a time span. That's in our material world, there's some time gap. And in that time gap, of course, there's stages also in which that activity begins to, or the reaction begins to fructify or manifest itself very gradually until it becomes more and more evident and finally hits you. So in Nectar of Devotion, that's called from the upper abda to the kuta to the bija to the prarabdha. These are technical names. Aprarabdha, aprarabdha, kuta, bij, and prarabdha. 4 stages from the karma to the act, to the opera of the stage, to the kuta, to the bija, to the prabdha. Prabdha means to be experienced now in this lifetime. That's the prabdha stage. So this, obviously this doesn't happen. There's a gradual manifestation of that karma on us gradually. And we become more and more aware of it in our life until finally we get it before our eyes, our experience.
Yeah.
So aparabdha means it's not manifest. You have no way of detecting it at that stage. And even now, we have karmas which are coming up in this lifetime. But we also have aparabdha karmas which will never. We don't even know they exist. They'll happen next lifetime or next lifetime or next lifetime or next lifetime. We've got piles of them waiting for us. The next, even if we don't do any activity in this lifetime, we got piles to push us into future lifetimes. This is because they don't end with one lifetime. Sometimes you have to have no karma for many lifetimes. You have to experience it three or four lifetimes also. So that's why we get overlapping karmas and big piles, because you can't experience them all in one lifetime sometimes. So the aparabdha is the big pile that you don't experience in this lifetime. You don't even know it's there. It's like something you forget in your computer, in your hard disk. You throw all the stuff in the back of the computer, you forget about it. It's there, but you're not even aware of it after a while. And your computer works fine without even reference to that material. Yeah? But it's there. It's nevertheless there. So these are the things that you're going to get in the future, but we're not even aware of them. Huh? Then the kuta and the bija are two intermediate stages of subtle development, in which there's a slight manifestation. And the aparabdha is the most subtle, and then we get a little bit of little more gross evidence of the karma coming up, and then the bija is more evidence. So in this lifetime we may find that we feel like something's going to happen, and you may even dream something's going to happen. So we're getting to the subtle stage where it's becoming manifest even in our mind, and somehow we get very disturbed and we don't know what's happening, and then finally we get the event on us. And so that the prabdha stage is where you actually get the suffering. And the bija is the stage just before that, where it's in our mind, in our subtle body, it's working its way in. What happens is all these karmas are stored in the subtle body, what we call like the mind element. And the mind goes with the soul birth after birth. So the karmas go in with the mind. They're stored there, like a, as I said, in the computer. So the mind is like a big computer, and all these karmas are stored there. And when they're ready to come out, they'll come out. It's like a virus in your computer or something. And when it's ready, it's time to come out, then it'll start popping up and do all sorts of things to your life. So the gradual stages are there. So the aparabdha, these are the stages of manifestation. Before that, the aparabdha is the act we've done. We do an act, and then we sometime in the future get a result. Now the act, of course, is of various types, and therefore we get various reactions or karmas. So broadly we have two types of activities. We have sin and piety. That is papa in Sanskrit and punya. These two things are there. And they give opposite results. Papa leads to suffering and punya leads to happiness. So you get a good karma or a bad karma. A good karma is that without doing anything, somebody gives you money or something like that, or you have good health all your life, you have a long lifespan, you have a happy family without too much effort, all these things. Naturally, you have a comfortable life, nice place to live, nice country to live in. That's good karma. That's due to punyas in the past. You've done some good activities. And if you get a lot of suffering in life, like sickness, short lifespan, poverty, work but no rewards, can't achieve your goals in life, all these sort of things, miseries, depression, all these, then that's bad karma. That means you've done sinful activities in the past. So what is the definition of sin? Or papa? That means that, of course, violence, basically. In order to, when you do something, you commit violence. That leads to, that's called sin. And when you do something which is not violent, that is, you do something beneficial in the material world, usually for someone else, then it is called a punya. Whether it's planting trees, or it is giving charity to someone, feeding someone, this is called punya. So for that you get a nice result in your future life. Unfortunately, it's not so simple, because everything we do in this material world must have some violence attached to it somewhere. Because if you give something to somebody, you have to take it from somebody else. Somewhere along the line, you have to take something from somewhere else in the first place. So it's a very complicated system, you know. So even if we do all punyas in lifetime, we also have to do some papas. Somewhere along the line. But of course, it's a matter of what type of papas and how extreme they are. So some sinful activities are more or less permitted. Some violence is permitted. In Shastra, you do some things, it's permitted. If you have to live, you have to eat. So it's permitted that you can eat. But you have to restrict your diets and commit minimum of violence in the eating process. Huh? Still, even if you do that, still there is some karma attached to it. Therefore, you have to take another body anyway. And you have to enjoy punyas. Even that is some sort of karma. So you have to get somehow you have to get another body in any case. And be subject to birth and death. So violence is allowed because we have to live. Yeah? So there's tolerance there. However, when it goes extreme beyond what is necessary, that is when we get the serious problems. That is when we get more serious problems in our life. That means that beyond necessary, what is necessary for our survival, etc., we do unnecessary activities. What's the motive? Why do we do all these unnecessary? Because we want to enjoy. We have to get our happiness somehow or other. To do that, then we have to take from somebody else. The happiness means we've got to get something, huh? We're going to get something, somebody has to lose something somewhere. Huh? So we do violence to another animal, plant, or human being. In order to get our enjoyment, we have to cause suffering to somebody else sooner or later on the line, somewhere down the line. Some suffering is caused. Huh? So when, in other words, we want our enjoyment and we don't consider the effect it has on other people when we're doing that activity. And if it goes beyond some certain limit, then it is called sin. Huh? When it becomes too disturbing to the other living entities, then we'll get reaction for that. Huh? So it is a very just system because according to the suffering you cause, you get equal suffering on yourself. That's all. For my enjoyment, whatever it is, whatever suffering I cause, I'll get the experience of that suffering in the future. That is a very just system. That's all. There's eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. It's like that. And the thing is, we cannot escape this. It's built into the material world. It is not like the government, and you can escape the government's eye, you know, and you can do some criminal activity, no one can find out. You can do that, but you cannot escape this law. It'll follow you for the rest of your existence. It'll catch you sooner or later. Huh? It's just built into it's just the law of the material world. We'll say, how is it a law? Because, you know, we have laws of physics and stuff to do with matter. That's okay, but you see, we're doing activities with certain feelings and desires. Well, how can material nature interfere and know anything like that and give us the effects? It's because the material world is built by the Supreme Lord in this way. And that there's a moral result for human beings. As well as physical laws, there's moral laws. We are conscious, a being, an atma. We have a mind, we have a subtle body, we have a gross body. So, identity, these laws stick with the subtle body, not the gross body. And there's subtle body, it's a material element, and there's laws for that also. So the law of karma sticks to that subtle body, and you have to get the result. So it's an inevitable law. Fixed in the material world, inborn into Prakriti itself, along with the mind. In this way, we have to be very, very careful about the activities we do. Now, this is not the beginning. The act is not the beginning. The act. Why do we do acts in this material world? Why do we do activities? Yeah, desire. What do we call it in Sanskrit? Icha? Kama. Kama. Kama is the source. We have desires. Desires to what?
Enjoy.
Yeah? Basically, everyone wants to be happy, yeah? Everyone wants to be happy. No one's going to say, I like to suffer. Everyone wants to be happy. So to be happy, you have to do something. You can't just sit there. Oh, normally we don't anyway. If you're a yogi, okay, you can be happy sitting. But normally, if we want to be happy, then we've got to do something. We've got to do something in the material world, do something with other people to be happy. So that means activity, to get our happiness. So, that is desire, comma. We have these desires. So that breeds action, action breeds karma. Yeah? Like that, that's how it goes. But what is behind the desire? Behind, ultimately, if we go back far enough, why do we have this desire to enjoy?
Why?
Yeah, yeah. The desire, because we are a conscious entity, conscious entity, I exist, I'm conscious, so I have awareness, I have senses, I'm aware, I happen to have some senses too, and I have senses to see what outside, consciousness, you know, have to see something outside and be aware of outside of things. So then the desire arises because of that. Yeah, if we're going to see outside, then we have desires to see it in a certain way, get impressions, and we have like or dislike, and then we do activities, isn't it? So desire is inherent in the, it comes along with consciousness itself of the jiva that is there. But then why does it end up like this? It ends up in this situation because we have desire, but we want to enjoy with ourself in the center. You see, that's the idea. Put ourself in the center of enjoyment. I want to enjoy first. I want to enjoy first. Other people okay, but second. So this is the main problem. I want to enjoy first. So we call this ignorance or avidya. In other words, we don't put God or Krishna or spiritual world, anybody else in the picture, any other jivas. We put ourselves in the center. And this is the big problem. And this leads to getting a material, subtle and a gross body, and identifying with the body, and then we do the activities to fulfill the desires. So the root problem is ignorance. Ignorance of what? Ignorance of God. Ignorance of Krishna. That's the main thing. The other way we can enjoy is to put Krishna in the center. Krishna is the object of enjoyment. He is the one that wants to enjoy. I am here. So the only way I can enjoy is by actually giving him enjoyment. So selflessly, without any motive, if I give enjoyment to the Supreme Lord, that is equal to love. When we do something for another person with no expectation of any return, what is the motive? Only because of love and affection, that's all. Not because we want something. So pure love is the motive for serving God or doing something for God. The result of that is we get the bliss. That is where our bliss comes from, offering unconditional love to the Supreme Lord. Then we get the bliss. We get happiness that way. So we're not devoid of happiness. We're supposed to experience happiness, but we cannot put ourselves in the center. We have to put God in the center. And when we refuse to do that, and we have to put ourselves in the center, then we immediately reject God. I'm in the center. If God may or may not, it doesn't matter. I'm in the center. I have to enjoy. So this is why we're in the material world. And then we develop material body, identify with the body. My body, I am my body. My body has to enjoy. And then we do activities, and then we get karma. So this is the progression in the material world. We get the results. When we do the act itself, there's several things taking place. We have a desire. There's two things. Desire, kama, is one. That is ichha. Another is dvesha. Yes. Hatred. These are the two. But they're opposite sides of the same thing, actually. I desire something, and conversely, I will hate those things which interrupt that enjoyment or obstruct it in any way. So I have two things, a comma and the opposite thing, desire and hatred. But they're not so opposite after all, but they're just two things to fulfill the same motive, that is enjoyment. So both operate. So some of the activities may be motivated by desire, other activities by hatred. Some activities I have to do to counter obstructions to my happiness. We do activities against another person or another thing because they obstruct my happiness. Then there's other activities we do. We do activities to avoid pain. We'll do activities to avoid difficult situations for ourselves. Yeah? So we want to enjoy and get happiness, and we want to avoid suffering of any sort, physical or mental suffering. Yeah? So our activities will be guided by this, basically. Yeah? Ichha and dvesha. So when we act, therefore, we do activities, and as a result of our activities, we get some result. We try for some result anyway from the activity. Like eating. Eating means the result of eating is I do an action to put my hand up here and then I chew the food and it goes in my stomach. So I get a result in terms of satisfaction in the stomach from the eating process. That's the act. And I get a result. That's an immediate, that's not the karma. That's an immediate result. That's the goal of my action. Sometimes I may not get that fully. I may fail. I may not get the right result. I may work, and I get no money. And I want to get the money, but I don't get it. So that's another thing where we expect a result, but we don't quite get it. We may get very little, maybe none at all in certain cases due to karma. So we get immediate effects, a positive or negative effect from an act. I may do something, and I'm expecting a good result, I get a bad result instead. Nevertheless, we get a result. So we do an act. We have a desire, we do an act to do something, and we get a negative or positive result, an enjoyment or a suffering as a result. That's not karma, that's just an immediate result. But we get an experience due to that. Yeah? And that sticks in our mind. This was a good experience. That was a good activity to do because I got a good experience. I'll do more of that, and I'll get more. I'll do more of that activity, and I'll get the same experience again. So that's the impression that sits in the mind, a memory, an impression, an experience. So that we have two things. We get an immediate result from our activity, a material result, so to speak, and then we get an experience which sticks in our mind. And it's either good or bad to do this. And that leads to desire and hatred. If it's good, then I have a desire to do this similar type of thing again. If it's bad, then I have a hatred of that thing. And so that is one effect. Now that effect is carried over in your next lifetime. That's not what we call karma, but that impression is carried over. Likes and dislikes, desires and hatreds. They'll carry over from one body to another because they're in the subtle body. And your strong attachments, your strong hatreds, your strong fears, etc., they will stay there. They'll like memories, and like strong memories, and they'll go with you to your next body. And then they'll appear in your next body again because they're in the subtle body. So the impressions carry over. The experiences carry over. Now besides that, the karma carries over. That is the reactions, the aparabdha karmas and the prabdha karmas, they also carry over into the next body. So we have two things coming over. One is your impressions due to your activities. The other is your karmas due to your previous activities. Both things are coming over. So the karmas will come. Will not come all at once. They'll come gradually in your life, one after the other, as you progress in life. And you'll have different experiences in life, and those are due to karmas. And they will manifest. So in this way, what is the karma actually? The karma is not that we're forced to do anything. It's only a situation. That's all it is. It's a situation. Which we don't choose, it just happens to us. That's what a karma is. You're born in the material world in a certain place with a certain body with a certain mother and father. You have no choice in the matter, it just happens. And you're born in that situation, that is a karma. And sometimes you have events in life that just happen to you and you have no idea they're going to happen. And you may like them or may not like them. Those are karmas again. They're circumstances you're put into by not your without your choice in this lifetime. And this happens. That is karma. It's a situation, it's not an activity. It's a result of an activity. It's a situation you're put into. Then, in that situation, what are you going to do? Then you'll develop desire, hatred, whatever, and then you do activity again. That's what happens. So we get a continuous, results of karmas, and then we do activities and we create more results in the future. That's what happens. Now the whole problem comes in is how we're going to respond to this event that happens to us. We're in a certain situation, and what are we going to do now? So this is where the intelligence of the human being operates. We have free will and we have intelligence. We're given choice, and the choice is based upon our intelligence, should be based upon our intelligence. This is the whole trick here. And then we get responsibility, which means karma. We'll get a result of this in the future. That's the karma. Responsibility is there. Free will is there. Intelligence is there. These are three things that are factors in our action. So we do have choice. We cannot say, I had to do this because of karma. No. The karma was there in terms of my situation. Then I chose now to do something. I wasn't forced to do it. I chose to do it. If we say I was forced to do it, then where is the responsibility? Then we can say I don't deserve any results because I didn't choose. Somebody else chose. But as a human being, it's our responsibility to make the choice, and we have to bear the results of it. That is what karma means. So therefore, karma gives us a situation in life. We have our previous desires carried over from the previous activities also, which are going to give us emotions when in any certain situation, I like it or I dislike it. But nevertheless, we have to choose. And we do have choice. It's not that we're forced to do anything. We have a choice at that time. Unfortunately, what happens is, due to the previous experiences and then the likes and dislikes, I will react to that event in terms of the likes and dislikes probably, that's all, without carefully considering. I want to get my happiness in this way. And therefore I'm in a situation, a frustrated situation now because of my karmas, which was caused by that previous enjoyment, and then will still think, I have to get my enjoyment anyway, in spite of this. I still have to get my enjoyment in spite of this reaction. So we'll try to do the same thing again. And then we'll get another karma for that, similar to the previous one, the one we're in now. So it's like an endless cycle of, we get caught in the same situation, we react the same way. So it's more or less a blind type of, existence in the material world. And this is generally what happens, unfortunately, for the human being. We get caught up in cycles like this. And you'll see this happening even within your own lifetime or within everybody's lifetime, that generally we have patterns which are very difficult to break. Habits, ways of thinking, ways of doing things. And that means, and choices also. It means ultimately our free will is not really free because we just do things in certain ways and we cannot make any other decision because of a habit. So we're put in the same situation and then we'll make the same decision again. Even if it's not a good result, we'll still do the same thing. Again and again and again. And we don't learn. So it's rather unfortunate that we're very slow learners. Too lazy to change. I couldn't do it because I just had to do it this way. I couldn't help myself. That's all. So I did it. When the karmas are there and they're very heavy upon us, then we'll react in all the wrong ways, and then we'll get very, very bad results again. So when we're in difficult situations, we can be angry, we can be dishonest, we can be violent, we can become criminal, we can disregard everybody else and just try to get whatever, become selfish, we can become selfish. We can become exploitative. We can become controllers, try to get what we want. Because we're desperate. We have to get that enjoyment again. So therefore the situation is pushing us down, and then we react in the opposite way to try to get something back again. So this is, in other words, we failed the test there, actually. The karma has a purpose for us to teach us something, but if we don't learn the lesson, then, we get the lesson again in the future life. So this is what happens. This is the life of dependence. We have our free will. We don't use our intelligence. But we have the responsibility anyway. And so we get caught up with future situations which we actually chose, but we don't like them. And then we cause ourselves more and more suffering this way. And then we wonder, well, who did it? And then we blame other people. Basically, all we do is blame other people for our bad situation. That person is responsible. This person is responsible. I'm not responsible. So this is a life of dependence. So we don't have our own independence. We don't have our own responsibility at all. And therefore, we can never direct ourselves at all in the material world. Because to direct yourself in the material world, you have to be responsible. You have to understand that your activities lead to certain results. And if you don't like the results, then you change your activities to get better results. But if you don't understand that principle, then you'll just act randomly in the material world to get what you desire without even thinking about what the results are. And you get some bad results, and then you can do the same activity again. So that's unintelligent. Very unintelligent. And in doing so, we commit more and more violence to other living entities, disturb other living entities more and more without consideration. For my happiness, I will let everyone else suffer. So this is very irresponsible. Very irresponsible. And we fluctuate. We get our happiness and we get our distress. And the happiness depends upon things in the outer world. I have to get these things, this is why I can be happy. We have no real goal, and we fluctuate between happiness and distress and become very worried that we're not going to get our happiness. So it's not a very good situation. Anyway, that is the situation in the material world. We don't really have any goal, and we go around just trying to get the enjoyment more or less. So that's the position. Okay. Okay. The other way you can act is to do the punyas, as I said. If you do an act which helps other people, and that is, you give something rather than take something, this gives rise to good results in the future. Like, you get happiness without your efforts. And not only you can do that, but by doing this, you can also reduce your present karmas, whatever you're suffering now. That's called prayasitta. If you're suffering now, you do past activities, sinful activities. You do punyas now, and to some degree, even now, you can relieve the problem. So this is what people do. They're suffering, especially in India, they're suffering due to karmas. So they will do some charity work, or they will do some worship of the deity, or do something, giving something. So this mitigates the problem to some degree. So though the law is inevitable, there are ways of lessening the results, that sentence, so to speak, you know. So this prayasittas and punyas is one activity you can do. Another way of reducing your karmas and all these problems is you become detached and renounced. Tapas. You do tapas. You start refrain from all your activities, and even if you have desires, you control them, and then you start renouncing things. This is very difficult to do. But some people do that. If you like the Nagababas or whatever, Kumbhamela, you know, they renounce all their relationships and their food and their clothing and everything, you know, and they live on the bank of the Ganga naked, and just wandering around, no house or anything like that. They're giving up all material attachments. So very difficult for the normal person to do that type of thing, to renounce everything and try to control your senses like that. Another activity is karma, or it's like a karma yoga, we can say, to distinguish it. And these are Vedic rules and regulations to follow to control yourself. You can do that. You have to act, but you can do it in a controlled way. So you can eat, but eat only certain things. All activities are regulated to limit the amount that you can, you know, commit violence in the world. So we have these in any society. There are rules and regulations of society. There are norms of conduct in society that everyone follows. Otherwise, you cannot live together. So we have these rules and regulations for everybody in every society. The Vedic society has more rules and regulations, and they're very specific on every aspect of life. Eating, working, family relationships, duties to perform, relationship with government, relationship with family, relationship with children, all these things. Yeah? Good and bad activities, all these things are rules for everything. Huh? So that is called, you know, karma yoga, or karma. And ultimately in that system, it's to reach a stage of nishkama karma. We do those activities and you consciously attempt to stop enjoying through these activities. You do the activities and you don't try to get any material results, any happiness for yourself out of it. So something like tapas, but not so extreme. We stay in society, we work and everything, but we gradually detach yourself, gradually. So this is okay, but it's a very gradual process again, quite gradual. It takes many lifetimes to work your way up in that system from Sudra to Brahman. And you get born in the same system, fine. If you don't have a system like that, it's very difficult. So in previous ages, okay, you could do that because they had a nice social system that lasted thousands of years. Here we don't have a social system that lasts more than 20 years. It keeps changing. It keeps changing every year almost. New generation, new system of, you know, relationships and duties. It all changes very, very quickly. So it's very difficult. Another process is meditation and jnana. Cultivation of knowledge and meditation, philosophy. This is an intellectual process, of course. But it does have some effect. And gradually one becomes detached in that way also. And one gets free from the gross and subtle bodies. One gets liberation finally, mukti, through that process. Yeah? So it works, but it's also very difficult. Very difficult to do for most people. Most people aren't philosophers. And though we get liberation from karma as a result of jnana, we get mukti, we don't get Krishna. We don't get spiritual world. We get an in-between state only. A neutral state. Out of the material world, but not in the spiritual world. So this is the problem. So the real way in which we can counteract karma is by reversing the root of karma. And what was the root? That was the ignorance. That we want to put ourselves in the center. We want the enjoyment, we want to put ourselves in the center. So if we want to get rid of karma, we get rid of the root. We get rid of the root by putting Krishna in the center. That means bhakti, devotional service. So by the performance of bhakti, we can take away the root, chop out the root of karma. And therefore karma dies, natural death. So the bhakti is the natural way, most natural way for everyone to conquer over karma. Because it gets rid of the root. That is that ignorance. Other processes don't do that. Okay, next point. Karma is not not just a punishment. Of course, that's there because we're slow learners, so to speak. So, therefore, we have to experience in order to learn. And most people don't learn except by suffering. That's unfortunate, but that's how people learn. Yeah, and they learn by suffering. And then they learn, I can't do that because I suffer. You put your hand in the fire, it hurts. And therefore, you don't put it in anymore. But if it didn't hurt, you would put your hand in the fire all the time. And you would probably burn it anyway, but it didn't hurt, that you get your hand, you end up with no hand as a result. So it's natural, of course, some things are there for survival. We do hurt because it's a reaction, you don't do it again, so therefore you protect your body that way. It's a natural reaction also. So karma also was like that. It puts us, the bad karma, the sinful activities, leads to bad karmas, and this puts us in difficult situations so that we will understand we shouldn't do those activities again. And the more serious you do an activity, the worse result you get. Just like in government and the law. If you murder somebody, then you get maybe death sentence or whatever, a life sentence for that. If you steal something, you won't get a life sentence, you get a lesser sentence, yeah? And they put you in jail for a few years maybe, or 1 year or whatever. Or they fine you. You steal from them, and they take the money from you. So according to the seriousness of the sin, then you get a suffering at some time in your future lives. It's a just thing. But it's there in order to make you learn that you did a serious sin, therefore you get a serious result. Don't do it again like this. So it's a very just system. So it's there to make us learn, not to make us suffer, actually. But the nature, our nature is such that generally we don't learn except by suffering. So therefore it's there. If you learn without the suffering, then you don't have to get the result. That's also very good. In the even in the government, they do that. If you actually rectify yourself very quickly, then they'll let you out of the prison quickly also. You get some, I don't know what they call it, but parole. Parole. You get parole because you're in good conduct. So, of course, you can't pretend here because you really can't pretend at all because witnesses know what's in your heart and know what's in your mind also. So if you're trying to act good but actually still have the intention to go out and do the bad thing, you can't fool anybody. So if we act good very sincerely, we've done something wrong and we do understand it is wrong and we make amends for as much as we can, then obviously the karma is not going to be so bad for us. We may get some result, but it's not going to be so bad. So it depends on our own attitude also. We can, because everyone makes mistakes, definitely. Everyone's going to make mistakes in life. Everyone's going to have karmas, bad karmas also. But if we're intelligent enough to understand what we're doing and seeing the results of that, then we become responsible, then we can actually stop the karmas from hitting us so badly by that. So in this lifetime, if we have karmas coming up also, then we can also stop them to some degree. So you can stop them by the punyas. We recognize I'm doing bad activities, I should do good activities instead. So we do punyas. We do all these other activities to help people instead of doing what we previously did. So this will help to cancel out the effects. Now that, of course, is a little devious in one sense because you could just do it superficially. I'll do it. I still have the desires to enjoy anyway. So then you do the same thing again because you really don't repent and you stop. You get the result. So it's a little bit, stupid on our part. We do that. So the real cure is we have to very deeply feel that we shouldn't do it, understand we shouldn't do it. It has to come from deep inside somewhere. So that takes a lot of experience probably and sensitivity on our part to come to that level of understanding. So the real cure is we have to very deeply feel that we shouldn't do it, understand we shouldn't do it. It has to come from deep inside somewhere. So that takes a lot of experience probably and sensitivity on our part to come to that level of understanding. Anyway, the point is that it's there for a purpose, the karma, not just that the Lord likes to see us suffer, but rather it's there to make us learn something, that we shouldn't do those activities, and we are slow learners, so therefore we end up with a lot of karmas like this to help us. And if we don't learn, okay, fine. Then at a certain stage it's too hopeless, and we get put in an animal body instead where we don't have any responsibility anymore. If we don't want to learn anything, and then the Lord says, forget it then, don't learn. Don't be so intelligent, become an animal instead. And then you don't have the intelligence, then you have the responsibility. As a human being, we're expected to have the intelligence to realize sooner or later. Be responsible. Okay. So in the Bhagavad Gita, we have all these ideas about karma. They're not all in one place. It starts in chapter 2, Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says you go from body to body, but he doesn't actually say how it works there. Then in chapter 8 he says, what you think of, you attain. What you think of when you die, you will certainly attain that. So what's, in other words, what's held in your mind is very important. And that's going to determine what happens in your next, where you go in your next lifetime. And of course in the last part, the last 6 chapters of Bhagavad Gita, then Krishna deals again with concepts of karma and different types of activities, sattva, raja, and tamaguna activities and things like that, and the different results you get from these activities. So it's spread out in different places. Nevertheless, it's a very important topic that we have to understand. So the initial condition of karma is not, the reactions that we have are not good. They're not very good. We don't learn. We just react according to our previous desires and try to get the same thing again. And this leads us to a helpless position. No responsibility and no use, proper use of our free will.
Yeah? Okay. Now we'll go a little bit.
In Western thinking, they analyze action. We do activities. Why do we do activities? And they'll give different reasons. One is heredity. It's all heredity in your chromosomes and genes. We're like what we do now. We're like this because it's our heredity. It's all heredity. That's all. Your mind functions. Everything is all hereditary, they'll say. It comes from your genes. So, in other words, we got no role to play, actually. It just happened. And we really got no control over what's going to happen or what we do. Another thing is, it's all environmental upbringing. That your parents influenced you, your neighbors influenced you, your friends influenced you, and therefore you are like you are because of your upbringing in childhood. And therefore any action we can trace to your, we can blame it on, you know, your parents or your neighbors or something like that. And the other is, it's just there's some things that happen in your brain. Certain reactions automatically happen in certain situations. You have different parts of our brain for different types of pleasure and stuff like that, and different responses for survival in the material world, which should come from the animal kingdom, like this. So in this way, it's all more or less responses, nervous responses, and that's how we act. So this is we can blame hereditary, in other words, your ancestors. You can blame your upbringing, that is your immediate parents and your neighbors and all that. Or you can blame the very nature of the mechanics of the workings of bodies. and that's how you act, why we act like this in the material world. So that's the Western analysis of it. Now in Hinduism, a lot of Hindus also talk about karma, you know. Oh, yes, karma is the factor in everything. But actually, it's very similar to this, the Western analysis. In other words, you don't choose anything. It just happens like that, you know, due to your body and due to your hereditary and due to your environment, whatever. And you have no free will at all. So you have your birth, you're born in a certain family, the environment is there due to karma, etc. And then activities. We do activities as a result of our karma. We do activities, then that breeds future karma, and then we get another birth with a different environment, and etc. And then we do more activities. So in other words, a lot of people think that the activities are a result of the karmas, or the reactions. But the problem with this is you can't change anything then. Where's the free will? We do activities, we get results, the results determine our activities. And we do more activities, then we get more results, and they determine our activities. So we've got nothing to choose in that scenario. So people think, yeah, karma is inevitable. We cannot do nothing. We can do nothing about it. It's all destiny. So that means you can't do anything in life. You can't choose anything. It's all karma. It made you choose. And this is all a mistake. It's not the correct understanding of karma. Because therefore, it's a shastra becomes useless also in this sense. I will follow the scriptures if it's my karma to do so, otherwise I won't. So the karma is there to make you into a better person. So there's a choice involved there. It's not that you're just your karma to do so, your karma not to do so. It's there to teach you something. So this idea of karma being just no free will at all, that's also bogus. It's not a correct concept. So the real thing is, yes, you have karmas. They're there, which gives you a certain family. I mean, we can say, okay, your genes and all that, that's your karma to get that particular set of genes for the soul in that particular body. You're born in that family. That is your karma. It's a result. That's destiny. You're stuck in there. And where? The place? Your environment? Also, that's your karma. Your father and mother? That's your karma also. And how the people that are going to bring you up, that's your karma also. Those things are definitely there. So those are the settings in which you exist, your spirit soul with your subtle body and your gross body, and you have these situations all around you. So those situations are your karma. So that situation, you're there, you have your eyes and your brain and everything operating, your senses operating. So that situation acts as a stimulus for you. Certain input is going into you. Then it goes inside, and you have a mind, intelligence, you have the soul there. And then something happens inside. Then you do your action. So that part, when all the stimuli come in, that is your karmas. When your karmas come into you, your situations go into you, then something happens and you do an activity. Yeah? So when it all goes in there, that is where the free will operates at that point. The karmas are there, your family is there, your environment is there, that's your karma, you have no choice in that. When it goes inside and you're reacting to that in a different way, and then you act, this is where the free will can operate. It usually doesn't operate, that's the problem. We don't use the free will. We don't make a proper choice. Free will means we have choice. Choice means you use intelligence, yes? Well, we don't use the intelligence here. What do we use instead? Desire and hatred. Reaction. Like or dislike. Hatred or anger or whatever. It suddenly pops up due to situations like this in the past, and I get frustrated and I'll just react. So our action is based on reaction to the karmas, not upon careful observation and intelligence and then proper use of free will. It is possible to use the free will here, but generally we don't use it properly. This is the problem. So therefore it looks as if everything is controlled and we have no choice, and it's karma that's going on like that. This is the life of dependence, where we don't really make proper choices. We just let it go on, and we get blindly put in situations, and then we just go on in this material world drifting around, wandering around. That's the life of dependence at the very top here. So the life of independence involves bringing out this free will and its choices and the use of intelligence. That is where we become independent, and then we can get control over everything and control where our life is going. Control the habits, control things, right? Control the senses, control the mind. So the idea here is that the maybe you can draw that on the board, this little diagram here. This part here. This is the last part here. Here's the wrist. So the point is that the stimuli or the karmas do not determine the action. They're stimuli only. And it is your free will which determines the action you do. But generally we don't use our free will properly. This is the problem. So we can use it. And that is what the human being, that's the real purpose of human life, to use that free will properly with proper intelligence. And that's what our intelligence is for. So you're just drawing this little diagram up there. Which one? Just the bottom part. Yes, the last one. This is the last one.
So this is the crucial point we have to realize. How to respond to the event. There's a story. It's a true story. This is a story of a man called Frankl. He was a Jewish psychiatrist in the 40s, before that, in Germany. So he was caught by the Nazis during the war, and he was put in a concentration camp. And he suffered, and his family suffered. They all died in the concentration camp, and he saw everybody else there suffering and dying and starving, etc. Terrible situation. So he was an intelligent person. So he was watching this, and he was questioning, why am I put in this situation like this? To see all the suffering around me, to see what evil things people can do. And then he was really trying to figure out why he was put in this situation, and then he thought, I am a psychiatrist, and I've been studying, mind and things like that. So maybe it has something to do with that, and I have to observe things very carefully here and see how people's minds work. So he began to observe everybody very carefully, And then he noticed that some people did not die. They survived. That was very rare, but some people survived. And they continued to live for a long time in that situation without such effect. Most people died very quickly because of lamentation, fear, frustration, hopelessness, whatever. They didn't want to live. So most people died. But there are a few people that did not die. So then they became curious. It's not the physical factor. There's something else that keeps these people alive. How are they different from the other people? They're all in the same situation. They're all not getting any food. They're all laborers. They're all getting mistreated and tortured. But these people survive. How is it? So then he thought and thought and thought about the situation, observed very carefully. And then he understood that actually we are not, we don't have a choice sometimes in some situations. He did not have a choice to go in that concentration camp, nor did any of those people. They were just put there. And once they were there, they also didn't have free will. They could not choose what they wanted to eat or not eat, or when to go out on exercise or not. They had very little freedoms. They were forced. Everything was forced. You have to do this, 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 and this. That's all you can do. So we were wondering, well, where is the free will, individuality and free will of the human being here? Does it exist at all? He was asking this. And then he understood that actually the free will may not mean we can act. We may not be able to act and choose actions. But and we may be forced in some situations where like that we can't. But in all cases, we can at least choose how to respond to that situation. We may not be able to act, but at least we can choose how to respond. And he said, this is the most important thing. And therefore, some people survived and some people didn't, because they chose to respond completely different from everybody else. Everybody else was uncontrollably moved by desperation and fear and lamentation and hopelessness. And therefore they died. But some people didn't, because they chose not to be affected by that situation in the same way. They did not respond in the same way as everybody else. They did not become hopeless. So then he had a big discovery there, that the ultimate free will is the choice of response, not the situation. And we can transcend the situation by our choice of response. So we're not affected by the situation. So therefore, our happiness is not dependent on the situation. Happiness and distress is not dependent on the situation. The happiness is from within, not without. Therefore, he says we should not be dependent on the outside world for our happiness, because you never predict what's going to happen. Your real satisfaction should be within instead, from your values. So we have our free will to choose response, and we choose response according to our values, and not what's happening outside. And according to the values we have, and the values are internal. And based on that, we will see how to respond to a situation. Then if possible, we can also act. If we cannot act, fine, at least we'll respond in the proper way. So therefore, he became very peaceful after that. He said, why should this affect me? It's got nothing to do with me. That's the situation around me. Why I should be affected like everybody else? I will not let it affect me in the same way. It became a very peaceful situation. In other words, just like was it Socrates when he's dying? Hey, you can catch me, you can poison me, you can't catch my soul. Can't poison my soul, can I catch my soul? So there, you can do whatever you want with my body, but still, I'm peaceful. The situation. I'm not going to act like you want me to act. I'll act like I choose to act like this. I'll choose to respond like this. So he became very peaceful and controlled. And he lived through the whole experience there. And actually what happened was, because he was in such a situation of control of his own mind and his own emotions and everything, everyone respected him there, including the guards and the SS and all these people there, the Germans. They respected him. And they would go to him for advice even. because he was seen to be superior to them. He had more knowledge than they had, more wisdom than they had, so they would go to him and ask for advice on certain things. So he survived as a result of that. Huh? So therefore, the what he says is that the free will resides in the choice of response. Even if you don't have a choice of action, at least the response, that's where your free will resides. And that choice should be dependent upon your internal values rather than, you know, emotions. It should be based on values, not on emotions. Not immediate like and dislike. But based upon your values. And the values should be something which is very deep and eternal. And then you can be peaceful. In all situations. So we have all sorts of karmas there, which are situations only. The karmas do not determine your action now. They're only stimuli to make you, influence you to act in a certain way. Then you choose. The stimuli are there, then you choose. But how you should choose? Normally we choose in terms of desire and hatred only, based upon our previous impressions. So we're caught in it, like just doing the same activity again and getting the same reactions again. And we're caught, we're dependent. The real way is to use your free will properly. But how do we do that? We have to base our reactions, our responses, to our values. A set of values we have internally, that's all. Inner values. Then upon that we can respond and we can also act. Okay, so in this way we actually have control finally when we can do this. We're not under control of our emotions or whatever or the situation. Yeah, in the karma we're under control of the situation, which is due to our karmas. Yeah? We're put in a situation, react according to our emotions, and then we can't help but do activities in a certain way, and then we're caught in the same type of karma again. So this is not the proper way. So when we act like this, with proper intelligence, then we can actually give direction to our life. Our intelligence tells us certain things based on values. The values give us goals, and then we can direct our life properly. Our activities can be very intelligent at that point. So our behavior is not a direct result of our environment or our upbringing or our genetics or anything. It's a function of our decisions. We act, or our behavior is due to our decisions, not according to our situations, our conditions. The conditions will make us respond in a certain way, but definitely they don't determine it. So the determining factor is our decisions, which are based upon our intelligence. So we should subordinate feelings to values. And then we can be responsible, and we can actually put goals up for ourselves, and we can achieve something. So this gives direction to our life. So our most difficult experiences become the crucibles for forging our character and developing our inner powers. So we're put in cameras like this so we can actually bring that out. Just like Frankl was put in that situation in order that he could make this discovery and transcend that situation. So we may also be put into the karmas. As I said, generally we don't learn unless we're put into difficult situations, unfortunately. So in those difficult situations, then we are forced one way or the other, either to defeat and go through the karma, or forced to realize something finally and get our free will operating properly. Okay. So, there are three types of problems we have. Most of the problems, a lot of the problems involve ourselves and our own behavior. This creates problems for ourselves and other people. That's one type of problem. That we can do something about. That's direct control. We can do something about that. And we should do something about that. And that's our problem. And we can solve that problem. That means we have to use our free will properly, become responsibly proactive, put goals for ourselves, and make sure we're following that goal. And then we can, that's our internal victory. We have direct control over this, we can do it. Other problems are due to other people's behavior. We cannot directly make them do anything, make them change their behavior, anything. All we can do is indirectly do that by influencing them somehow or other, so they will also adopt a similar attitude and get control of their own life and become independent. And that way we can help them. And that way we can control, in one sense, by helping them achieve some sort of non-dependence and become independent and overcoming karma. That's indirect control. Other problems are not due to human beings at all, and not due to not directly anyway to people we know. And maybe situations in the world, it's very difficult for us to control. World situations, political situations, whatever. No control. So how do we deal with those? We can do nothing about it. All we do is by our attitudes. Just like Frankl in the concentration camp. Couldn't do anything. There's no choice involved. There's only an attitude. That's all you can choose. You can choose how to respond, but no action was involved. So those problems, only by attitude we can have a response. But we can't really do too much. Now, we can choose to respond, and then we can choose to act. Now, all the acts we choose may not give results. We cannot control those results. They may give good results, they may not give results. We cannot predict. So it's beyond us. We have to be a little detached also from the final result. We can do the activity based on our choice, fine. But we cannot always control the result. Sometimes we make mistakes also. And once the mistake is made, it can't be undone. All we can do is acknowledge the mistake and try to correct, learn from it, and correct it in the future. That's all we can do. That's a proactive way of dealing with our mistakes. So in this way, from failure comes our success. So definitely we will make mistakes also, even when we choose, using our free will. But it's not so serious, because we can correct that by not doing it in the future in the same way. That's all. So, in other words, the first principle is we have to rise out of the world of dependence, that's the world of karma, and come to the position of independence through taking responsibility, using our free will properly, and becoming responsible. That's the first step for the human being. That's the first victory for the human being, if you can do that. Okay, any questions there? So that's what karma is for, to bring us to that point, a responsibility.
It seems that, like most of us, you were saying, don't actually use this independence and free choice to apply the intelligence. It seems there needs to be strong example of where this is done and successful, then people are more likely to take that path rather than just go with whatever comes their way and waste their opportunities.
You need examples.
Yeah. Otherwise you feel that whether I make the choice or not, this may or may not result. But if I see someone else is actually achieving something by following a particular path, then I go, oh, that's a good result, I want that.
Well, of course, there's many examples of that in the material world. I'm not so familiar with the material examples, but there must be. Let's see. In these books, they give so many examples like that of people that do that. Or we can choose scriptural examples also. Let's see. Jagai Madai. They were hopeless cases. Now, of course, we can attribute to mercy of Lord Chaitanya. That's also there. It influences there. But even though the Lord gives mercy to everybody, still we also have to respond properly. And the same with Murgari the hunter. He was also in a very bad position. And he also got the great mercy of Narada Muni. Nevertheless, they also had to become qualified, so to speak. And that qualification was, I mean, they took some responsibility on their part and do something in that situation. Yeah? So they're in a particular situation where, of course, they were doing bad activities, and someone comes along and says, okay, this is wrong, it's a bad activity. And then we have a choice of response there. We can attack the person, insult them. That was the first response of Jagai Madai. They attacked Haridas Thakur and Nityananda Prabhu and wounded them, etc. In the case of the hunter, he became very angry at Narada Muni when Narada Muni says, you are the cause of all the suffering of the animals. And he became very angry. That was his first response. Reaction, we can say. He is interrupting my pleasure. Therefore, I become angry. And that's the same with Murgari, Jagai Madai. They became angry at Nityananda because they said, you give up all this nonsense and you chant Hare Krishna. We're not going to give this up. And they attacked them. So the first response was anger, yeah? That was the first response, anger. And then maybe violence. So that's a typical materialistic response. But then we see that Lord Chaitanya, of course, threatened them. But at that point, they also realized, they came to some sort of realization of their situation because they saw the conduct of Nityananda Prabhu and how tolerant he was of the situation. And they began to respect him. That this person is someone special. This person's not, he is not, disturbed by what we've done to him even. So they got some admiration for that, some respect. When that respect was there, then they could get the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And once they got the mercy, it's not that it was a blind thing that disciplined the advance, but they actually were very sincere at that point to rectify their mistakes. And they did many activities serving the Vaishnavas, etc. after that point. And the same with Murgari the hunter, he was like that. Another example is in the America, I think it was, there were two twins born. They're exactly the same situation, same mother and father, same neighborhood, same environment as a child. And it was very bad. Father was, I think, a criminal or a drug addict or something like that, and the mother didn't take care of the kids. And they grew up in the worst neighborhood with a lot of crime and drugs, everything there. But therefore, we'd expect the children to turn out very bad criminals or whatever, drug addicts. And sure enough, one did. One became a drug addict. And ended up in jail. A criminal. Thief. Everything. Useless. But the surprising thing is that other twin, they had the same genetics and everything, born at the same time, in the same family, had the same upbringing, everything. He did not become a criminal. He became a very good citizen. He became a leader of the community. So everyone is wondering, how did this happen? How did it happen that two people in the same situation somehow came out in different ways? And we cannot say it's genetics, because they had the same genetics. We cannot say the environment, because they had the same environment. So what was it that determined the difference? So they went and asked. So they asked the man in jail, the criminal brother, okay, why are you like this? Why are you in jail? Why are you become like this? Look at your brother. He's such a good citizen. And then the answer he gave was, look, this is how I was brought up, and I was brought in such miserable conditions, so I couldn't do anything about it. It's predictable. I had to do this. And then they went to the other brother and said, look, your brother said this, and you were born in the same situation. How come it didn't happen to you? So then that brother said, yes, we were born in the same situation. We experienced the same things when we grew up also. And that was very bad. Yes, I agree. Everything is bad about it. Very bad situation. But at a certain point, then I realized this is so bad. It's so bad. There has to be something about it. So I decided to do something about it, and I did it. I changed the situation because I didn't like it. So I did something different. I didn't like that situation, so I did something different. And so he worked hard, and he got an education, went to university, graduated, and then he, you know, got a job, and became very successful. He worked at it, and he said, "I don't like the situation; it's very bad, so I'll do something about it." So they had the same circumstance, the same situation, but had a different reaction, a response to that situation, and made different choices, and then he got different results. That's all. And so the one man, he followed his karma, so to speak, and got pushed around by his karma, and all of a sudden lost his free will in the process. The other one, he used his free will, and he got a different result.
It's just like the guy that was in the concentration camp.
Yeah.
Even though he went to jail.
Yeah.
He was in jail, he still had positive influence, a positive effect on him, rather than a negative.
Well, the negative, of course, he saw everybody die, including his own family. That's not good. The positive effect was it pushed him to the position of understanding that free will resides in the individual and every individual in choice of response to the events around us, which was a big discovery for him. And so that's the benefit he got from that. And he survived that situation. So from that, he learned that your attitude is part of the element of your survival is your attitude to how you respond to situations. And response should be based upon eternal principles and values, not upon emotions.
Say, for instance, you're talking about psychologists. Say someone's on, say, illegal drugs or even prescription drugs or something
Yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
How do you interfere with your natural thought patterns? And that's easier for you to slip up because you're not thinking right.
Yeah.
And yet, still somehow, you
know that you can't just go around
doing whatever
you
like. Mm-hmm. Even though you sometimes get confused over some situation. Mm-hmm.
Due to the drugs. No, not due to the drugs. Okay.
Say, for instance, you're on drugs
in
the field, your natural thinking.
Yeah.
It's easy to sort of get confused about things.
Oh, yeah, in life we get confused, yeah, by the situations. Yeah, definitely. That's a common experience. So what are we going to do about it? I think I'll cover that tomorrow, that how we can get we get confused because we don't have a center of values upon which to base our activities. We don't know what's right and wrong anymore, and we don't have a centered life on positive values, which are part of us. So we become very confused about what to do. So that's what we have to cultivate.
Do you see that the ignorance of the law of karma, at least an individual, in terms of there can't really be any responsibility for my actions. Do you see that somehow connected to, in terms of our society and our very weak penal system, the psychology one? Do you see that there's a connection?
Yeah, I suppose so. Maybe they're guilty also, because the society made them, therefore they're guilty to punish them or something, yeah? Yeah. Yeah. It's a puzzle, you see, because they don't know how to cure them also. It's a compassionate sort that we should cure everybody, including the criminals, but then they don't know how to do that. So they want to be compassionate without curing them. And it's also very difficult to do that, because then you have a lot of problems that you have to just kind of keep locked up all the time, or else they come out and they create problems in the society again. So it's a very peculiar situation there.
We have two tracks in our subtle good and one. First one, which means karma, our particular situation in our life.
Mm-hmm.
The second one, which means our habits.
Memories,
patterns, reactions.
Yeah. There's another part that brings our karmas.
In most cases, we can see that habits are stronger than person.
Habits are stronger than?
Stronger than person. Than person's view. Most cases.
Like Arjuna, is Arjuna says that, you know, what makes us act even against our will?
Yeah.
And then Krishna says, "Kama," he said, "Krodesh." Kama. Yeah. So the desires overcome the intelligence, we can say.
Yeah. And then, actually, the question is, how in a situation and then a person's habit stronger than his intention, how he can start to fight?
Well, sometimes then...
How can you see? Because in most cases we can see.
Yeah.
Persons understand it, but he wants to change something. He couldn't.
Only when we... Only,
He now in a situation without free will, in some particular stage,
Well,
that understanding is the beginning of our... But he cannot practically use free will.
Only when he suffers enough. In that case. And that's for the drug addict or the drunkard. No one can cure that person unless he wants to get cured, yeah? You can't make him get cured unless he really has the will to do it. And usually he's not going to get that will until he suffers enough. When he suffers, he gets to the bottom, and then he decides it's enough. I can't do it anymore. I got to take the risk and get out of this situation, yeah? That's what he'll do. He may not do that. He may just commit suicide or whatever, you know? But sometimes they have to go to the bottom and suffer, and then they realize this is the worst condition. I've got to get out of it now. That's not a good solution, but it's sometimes the only way. They can get the free will operating. Yeah? Just like smoking is bad for your health, yeah? But how many people smoke? In spite of the ad on that little thing on the cigarette package that's injurious to your body, still people smoke. Their intelligence isn't there. They don't want to die. And smoking is going to help kill you, but still we smoke. Now, that's not intelligent at all. Yeah. But so why? Why? Because, yeah, the desire is stronger than the intelligence. So what's going to make them change? When they see themselves dying, or when they see their husband or wife dying, cancer, getting lung cancer, or when their children start smoking and getting the problem, then maybe they'll change. But otherwise, they're not going to change. A lot of people. Of course, some people, they read it and they won't smoke because it's bad for you. You know, they just read it. But a lot of people, they have to go through this whole thing. Then they'll stop smoking. When they see they got lung cancer, then they'll stop maybe. Some people even then are foolish. They still smoke. Even after they got their disease, they still go on at the end of the life. And so some people are less intelligent.
It means it's only suffering which...
Well, not in all cases, but the less intelligent people... Yeah, the less intelligent people, suffering is the...
Well, in many cases we can see that the suffering to end...
Yeah, and they still don't change.
They have understanding, they have to change, and they have to fight, and they suffer to end. Yeah. It means that... Not enough for them in this life.
Yeah. Many lives of suffering, and then they understand. That's what karma is. Many lives of suffering, and then you understand, I shouldn't do it anymore. Yeah? So it's a slow, as I said, we're slow learners. Slow learners.
In that particular situation, he has no actually opportunity to apply free will.
No, he can, but he doesn't want to. His free will to change, but he doesn't do it. Just like the man born, the two twins born in that same situation. One changed, one didn't change. One uses free will properly, the other didn't.
He has a desire which you can see, he understands. It's already been some primary desire he has to change. But he tries again and again and successfully.
May not. Yeah. May happen like that also.
Huh? It's most persons I saw in my life at that stage.
Where they keep failing.
Yeah.
But then probably it's the way they're trying and what they're trying and their attitude to that, which makes them fail again and again also.
Absolutely.
So do we actually, the understanding I have is, do we actually use our intelligence based either on the false ego or the real ego? Is that sort of...
Oh, well, in the material world, we have our false ego, we have our intelligence, and we have our mind, and then we have our body and senses, yeah? So the senses and the mind kind of operate, and the intelligence all act together to try to get the enjoyment, basically. So the intelligence is the servant to the mind, which holds impressions, and then the senses go out and get the enjoyment, so to speak, and do the activities. Yeah? So they're all caught up. And all that is under the illusion due to the false ego, that I'm a material body and I have to get my enjoyment. So it all goes together in one package of, you know, ignorance. I'm the material body and I have to enjoy separately from Krishna. That's basically what all these things are for. Eh? False ego, etc. But we cannot say, therefore, that the false ego is responsible or the mind is responsible or the senses are responsible for my sinful activities. The origin is the choice of the jiva. The free will does not reside in the mind or the intelligence. It resides in the jiva. The jiva uses the intelligence to make the decisions ultimately. And the choice is, do I want to serve Krishna or I want to serve my own enjoyment and Maya? That's basically the two choices. That's the free will. Surrender to Krishna or surrender to Maya. One of the two. That's basically the final choice we have to make.
It seems to me that with the philosophy, you're saying that to be successful ultimately, even on a material platform, therefore we should be responsible, and that responsibility has to be taken based on inner values.
Yeah.
And then we have a society that says no one is responsible.
Yeah.
And we're not sure what values are.
We can see
that it's predictable that Kali Yuga will be a complete disaster.
Yeah.
It's directly predictable just from that analysis.
So in spite of that, there are a few people who will succeed to counteract that. That's the spiritual people, devotees. Huh? But they have to be strong. They definitely have to be strong for the spiritual life.
And their philosophy is different. It says we do have to be responsible, and we should have values based on something.
Yeah.
Not just whatever I feel like. Which is
So where are those values? They come from the soul. The spiritual values, those are the eternal things, ultimately. So your values have to be centered very, very deeply. Very, very deeply. So it means, in other words, you have to contact with the soul, not with your mind, intelligence, and the outside world so much as with the soul itself and with Krishna and God. Then you have that center, then everything else will start making sense.
But aren't these values ultimately a natural thing anyway, aren't they? The soul.
Yeah.
And more natural anyway, all these other values
are definitely
certainly peculiar that you can't tell what's what with these
things. Yeah, they are, but the problem is that the mind and the intelligence and the false ego interfere because we want that the kama is there also. And so therefore we distort those values and we exploit them for our own purposes. And then we end up in problems because of that. Huh? So in other words, it's the values over the desires. Huh? And the values have to act stronger than the iccha-dvesha, the like and dislike and all that. And that's the basic thing.
In the beginning you mentioned how you get immediate remarkable results of what we do, which is either good experience or bad experience, and that determines the impression that we carry what we want to do in the future. But what comes in with a bad habit that makes it so powerful that it counteracts that principle when you get a pattern so that it won't do it anymore?
But we do also, it's an easy way out in one sense. A bad habit is there. Usually we do get some enjoyment out of it also. And we're willing to sacrifice all the bad things for that little enjoyment. It may be the enjoyment, it may be just laziness also, of course. But essentially there is some sort of happiness we get out of that situation, which makes us do that in spite of the fact that we get all the problems. Just like smoking is a bad habit, yeah? But why do they smoke? Because they get some sort of happiness out of that, in spite of the fact of all the negative things. So any habit is like that, basically. It serves its purpose of giving us some sort of comfort, which may be very negative sometimes, because some of our habits or personality traits may be actually cause a big disturbance to ourselves. But it's like it's some sort of trick, a shortcut in the mind that we have just to, you know, keep some sort of little bit of illusion of happiness there for us, you know? Like critical nature or something. Let's say if someone has a very critical nature, they criticize everybody. That's a bad habit. It's an anartha. So how can that get happiness? But by doing that, they do get a sense of supporting their own, they confirm their own ego through that process, and that I'm better than they are. Like that. So they get some sort of feeling of happiness out of that, ultimately. It may not even be conscious, maybe an indirect thing. And usually it is. They're not saying, I get happiness because, you know, I'm criticizing them. But they do feel some sort of, you know, comfort because of they can criticize other people. So a negative thing, you know, it's there.
How do we respond to, when you try to say, pass on the message of Christian people, and they see that, you know, why do we have to be good? You know, you see these people who are doing all the bad things, they're getting all the benefits and so forth and so forth and so forth. And you know, we should act like that rather than act good. Because if we act good in our lives and still we get a bad result.
Yeah.
So if we say we pass on these good methods to people will respond that way. Yeah. I don't need to be good, I'm just gonna be like him, you know, he's getting everything.
Yeah. Well, some people you cannot preach to. It's very difficult to if they're stuck in that attitude. They'll just have to wait for a future life, I suppose, to get enough experiences, you know, like that. But you can tell them, okay, you observe very carefully these people you think are enjoying. You observe very carefully and see how much they are enjoying. And you see the final result in their life when they die, what happens. You see how they are, what they feel like when they are in the deathbed.
But their response is that you know, I only have this life. They don't bother about anything.
Yeah.
I want to enjoy this life only. Yeah. When I die, I finish.
Yeah, but what is enjoyment? Again, okay. What is that enjoyment? Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing is, it's not the end. You'll learn that after you die, and you'll realize that. Yeah? Very definitely. Yeah, I told maybe the other day, I told the story of the man that got electrocuted, and then he almost died. He had a near-death experience, and he clinically died, and they were trying to operate, and they couldn't save him. He went out and wheeled him to the morgue. But he went out of his body, and when he went out of his body, then he went into this other world. And they showed him his whole life. And then he realized that he didn't do anything in his life except work for himself. And he was standing in front of these people who were completely opposite. You know, they were full of, you know, love and compassion. And he was there with his whole life in front of him. They could see his life, and he could see his life go by, all the events of his life. And he was just acting everything selfishly for himself. Not, you know, real gross, but ultimately that's what it was. And then he was standing there, and he realized he didn't do anything. His whole life was a waste. And compared to these people, you know, who are completely opposite, you know, he had no value in his life at all. He had accomplished nothing. He hadn't, grown at all or matured in his life at all. He was acting in the same way all of his life, just for his self-interest. And he felt completely ashamed. Then when he went back in his body later on and he recovered, and then he changed his life like anything. So it takes an experience like that sometimes to change people also. And then he realized, you know, we are eternal. We're not bodies. We have karma. We get results in the future lives for this, what we do now. And he realized that.
So basically, we have to either work for surrender to Krishna,
yeah,
or surrender to our own enjoyment.
Yeah, yeah. And that's his final choice. Yeah, finally.
Is it true then that sometimes we're suffering so much, still we're not able to change our habits, but maybe by Krishna's help, by his interference, the person is able to start really?
What if we pray hard enough? In other words, on our own it may be difficult, but nevertheless, Krishna, the Supreme Lord, Paramatma, is there to help us also if we really are trying. Yeah?
From experience, it seems like it's even more complicated, because in some cases, persons, they suffer and they go further in ignorance.
Yeah.
And in other cases, they suffer and they sharpen their intelligence. In that
case. Well, I said the example of the two twins. One went down and one went up in the situation. And both the choices are there. And we just have to somehow maybe come to that realization. One did it, one didn't, somehow or other. You know? So, then you have to get the experience next lifetime again, and then maybe you'll.
Should suffer first.
Okay, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.